on behalf of our whole parish and our whole community. I want to extend to Jack and to the Yatsko children, John and Janice and Steve and Michael and Karen, and to their spouses, Sharon and Robin and Laura and Doug. We want to extend to Patricia's brothers, Michael and Paul, and Michael's wife, Elaine, and to all the 9 grandchildren and the 1 great-grandchild, almost 2 great-grandchildren, and to all of the cousins and family and co-workers who have assembled here, but especially to Jack. We want to extend to you our sincerest condolences in the promise of our prayers and an awareness that Pat will continue to be remembered in this community of faith, not just in the ordinary ways, on the Feast of All Saints and All Souls and on the anniversary of her death, at the entrance of our church, in our prayers for the dead, but she will be remembered really in so many hearts that she touched, so many lives that she affected. And the fact that this church is nearly full, that there are close to 400 people, about 400 people in here, says something about the impact that she left in this community and in this life. And tells us something about our own lives, too. What is of value? What is of importance? You know, in Philippians, Paul says to the people in Philippi, you know, that in his own sort of valediction at the end, he says he wants them to think on whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is gracious, whatever is good, whatever is kind, whatever is righteous. Think on these things. And when you think of Pat, you think of those things. And so we want to extend to you our condolences, but to say that this is also a death in our family, too. And we will miss her. We all feel a little bit disoriented today because a month ago she was among us and apparently healthy and fine. And today we feel a little bit disoriented without her. This funeral, which is too soon and too sudden by our reckoning. But our reckoning is not God's reckoning. And our timing is never God's time. Just to say that we are grateful for the many happy years that we had with her. And we have to say that by whatever measure, this was a happy, fulfilled, generous, and loving life focused on those things which a good life is focused on. And that at some early age in her life, perhaps from her training in the Sullivan household and perhaps from her training in school, she caught a vision of what it was to be a servant of God, a servant of the common good, a kind and gentle and loving woman, a person of faith, a wife and mother. And any one of us would count our days as coming to a successful conclusion if we could look back on a life like Patricia's. And we count ourselves blessed to have known her in this community. 37, 38 years in Calvert County. She began her life in a very different place, in the Bronx, in New York. Her dad, Leon, and her mother, Elizabeth, were raising their family in an apartment house, or a duplex, rather, in the Bronx. But they left there in 1952 when Pat was about 13 years old and moved to suburbia, to White Plains. But she did her grade school years at St. Benedict's in the Bronx. And when they moved to White Plains, she began a different kind of life, more suburban life at St. John's High School. She was in the Glee Club. She was a good student. She had many friends, as we can readily imagine. She was popular there. She did all the things that teenage girls in the 50s did, dances and sporting events and clubs in school, babysitting. She worked at AT&T in New York for a while. And then almost immediately after high school, she did something which is unusual for girls to do. She joined the Navy. And I think that says to me that she had a sense of adventure, too. She joined the Waves, went first to Bainbridge, Maryland, and then ultimately was assigned to Great Lakes Naval Base, the Naval Training Center there at the Naval Examining Center. And that's where she met Jack. He had been injured in an auto accident, and so instead of being reassigned to Japan, he was reassigned to Great Lakes. You know, we were saying on Sunday, pay attention to the coincidences. Because God is in them. Those God incidences. And maybe that automobile accident was one of those that brought you together. Jack, still in the Navy, working as a part-time bartender an evening, met Pat there. And we can say that in a Catholic, Methodist church, you wouldn't say that, but I imagine she didn't pay full price for drinks. No. He was a bartender at a place called Laverne's. It sounds like it should be right out of Laverne and Shirley. Because you're kind of close to Milwaukee there. And she came in there. And as happens, occasionally a love affair began there at the bar. It continued on until their wedding in 1962 in Drexel Hill, Pennsylvania. I guess it was Drexel Hill. Did we resolve that with Betty? Well, it was actually Drexel Hill. But, and then the family began life in Hammond, Indiana, where Jack was working for the famous mat makers, Rand McNally, as a printer's apprentice. Eventually, they moved to Philadelphia first, where Jack was working for the Cuneo Press, and then to Washington, D.C. in 1965, where Jack started work at the General Printing, the Government Printing Office. They had all of the busyness and activity of young families, and their children came along like stair steps at regular intervals. There was one blip there. Well, John in 64 and Janice in 67, and then Stephen and Michael 5 minutes apart or 2 minutes apart in 1969, and then Karen in 1971. So her life was busy with all of those children. And at the very same time, in the 1970s, they moved to Dunkirk and started a business. And so her life was busy inside and outside of the home. But, you know, that seems to be a pattern in her life. There never was a time when she didn't fill the hours with activity. And that way she's very much like the woman described in Proverbs 31. She eats not her food in idleness. She was always busy with life. They moved down here, I guess, to be closer to a golf course. But what began in golf was preserved in love in this community, where they quickly integrated themselves into the life of Calvert County. You know, that was hard to do in the 1970s, because if you weren't born here, you were always from somewhere else, which would include just about everybody in this church. But they quickly became part of this community. They lived next door to our former deacon, Tom Battaglia, who we buried earlier this year, Tom and Lynn. And with their kids at Calvert Christian School, Pat used to work in the library there. She was on the board there. She was very much involved in the life of that school. She used to drive the kids down to Brooms Island Road when she wasn't racing the school bus down there. The kids could ride the bus to Calvert Christian, but you had to be there on time. And if they weren't on time, Pat in her bathrobe would be chasing the bus down the road in her, with honking the horn at the bus, trying to get all those children onto the bus. She was the kind of attentive mother and patient most of the time. I think when we were talking to the kids the other day, I said, you knew you were in trouble when she grit her teeth. But she helped them with homework. She made costumes. She was imaginative with things like that, costumes. She made, who was it? She made somebody a worm costume one time. You're the worm. And who was the box? Okay. So, Janice was the box. Okay. She did all of those things with that mothers do for their children, and children never really fully appreciate until later in life, when they have to start doing them for their own children. And then they realize, my gosh, that was a lot of time. That was a lot of effort. I see that with our children in the preschool. You know, they think it's just normal at age 3 or 4 that people spend days and days making paper mache dinosaurs for them, you know. And then they look back probably someday and realize that was an act of love on the part of my parents. She was a great cook. She liked to experiment around with things, but she put everything into margarine containers and never labeled anything. So there was a certain mystery about opening the refrigerator door. And every now and then she would take out all the margarine containers and dump them in a pot and heat it up, and that was dinner. It was chicken every way. She loved the holidays, and she loved to celebrate with her family. Their birthdays were all in March and October, so those were times of celebration. She liked to go camping with the family and on vacations up to Pennsylvania to visit Aunt Betty and Uncle Lou. All of those things which are part of the fabric of life. In the midst of all of this, they were starting a business. It was Select Printing, and then eventually became Maryland Printing and Graphics. And, you know, it's a lot of work to start a business. And Jack was up at the GPO a lot of the times in the early days, and so really, Pat was running the business. And so she had to learn about printing. I'm sure she didn't anticipate that when she married you, but... Well, this is what people do in a marriage. They make things go. And they ran a basically mom-and-pop print shop, which gradually grew and grew and involved the whole family. She ran the front desk, and she did the graphics work. She learned all the aspects of printing. Every day, in the midst of all of that, she made 5 lunches. She took requests within a certain limited range from her kids. She cut the boy's hair once, not always perfectly. Once she cut Jack's hair so close that she had to tape some hair over the bald spot. And she was doing that right up until recently. She gave Steve his last haircut. Every Sunday, she had to corral the kids for church. Now, this happens with parents. You have to get the kids up and going for church. Her standard line every Sunday morning was, God gave you your life. The least you can do is give him 1 hour a week. Get in the car. But on the way home, they always stopped at the grocery store, and the kids knew that she was gone for a couple of hours because she would run into people in the store and have to talk. And that's the way life in a small town is, but that's the nice thing about it. That's what we like about it, is that there's a certain, even in these anonymous tasks of doing the food shopping, there's a certain community. We run into each other. People care about you. They want to know about your life. Every Christmas and every Thanksgiving, all of the holidays she loved to celebrate, she had a more practical cast about things like that, perhaps, than Jack did. One Christmas, she gave all of the children a laundry basket filled with towels, sheets, socks, and underwear. And they were told that from now on they're supposed to do their own. And children were delighted. She left out the lump of coal. But the children were no doubt delighted by that gift. But I guess you made up for it. You know, she liked celebration. She liked music. I remember her at parish dances and events. She enjoyed those things. She liked to dance. She was a pretty good dancer. She liked the jitterbug. She liked ballroom dancing. She even managed to corral Jack into taking ballroom dancing classes, which is, you know, that's the way wives have to do it. And and she taught me a dance one time. The tootie tot. I remember being at dinner with their dinner group on a Saturday night. And this is the first time I was ever with you people for dinner, I think. And she gets out this recording of the tootie tot, and she said, oh, we're going to do this. And I thought, what a strange bunch of people, isn't it? You'll see it later on, because Cheryl has unearthed a copy of the tootie tot. It's a preschool dance, but it gets you wound up in all kinds of knots. And we were in such hysterics doing it, I think it was Sandy had the idea that we should do it for the kickoff for our fundraising for this church. And so Father Hines and I, Father Hines was an ample fellow at the time, we're up there doing the tootie tot on Calvert High School stage. It's a wonder that we lived down the ignominy. You know, through all of this, she was a woman of faith, of deep faith. She was involved in so many aspects of this parish that everybody who spoke last night said, oh, I met her here or there, and they were all different things. She went to EPS with the McLeods. EPS is Education for Parish Service. It's a 2-year program where you go to Trinity College. It was a great program while it lasted. But you know, you really, it's taking seriously your service to the church. She was involved in all of our Bible studies and small groups. She was involved with Crucio, both on as attending and on team and in small group prayer groups. She was involved from the very beginning in Birthright. I remember meeting, I think our second meeting about Birthright, Pat was there, along with Patricia Kelly. And she served, I think, 18 years on the board of Birthright. She was the treasurer. She always seemed to get stuck with the financial aspect of stuff. But, you know, somebody, it's like being secretary of any board. You know, the two most important people are the secretary and the treasurer, because one keeps the records and the other one keeps track of the money. And she kept that place going. I think I was on the board for 10 years. And I remember her conscientiousness. But it wasn't just keeping track of the funds. She was involved in every aspect. The kids' clothing, the supplies. She was involved in the counseling. She was involved in the training of counselors. She was involved in so many ways. And think of all the lives saved. All the babies born who might not have been born. You know, we have 100 girls a month who visit Birthright. Now, they're not all pregnant, but maybe 30-40% of them are. And if even you save one or two lives a month, think of that in 20 years, how many children are alive in this community because of the work that Patricia and so many others did. And we're grateful for that. You know, I think that's really how we have to make a pro-life statement. Make it possible for these lives to come into the world and to support people in their moments of crisis. Pat was a humble person. I don't think she was... I never saw her really try to call attention to herself. She was even willing to laugh at herself. I think... Janice was telling us about a time she fell on her face one time, literally, when they were at a conference in D.C., Women of Faith conference, and they're walking down the street, and she's complaining about how can kids walk in these high heels this way, these shoes that they wear today, and then they turned around, she had fallen down. She had fallen. But she got up, even though she was swollen from the fall and all that, and was able to even laugh at herself. I think that she also enjoyed the social life of this community, bowling and golf and cards, all the sorts of things that bring people together. You know, if you have a large circle of friends, as she did, it's a sign of your love for people. It's a sign that you enjoy people. And I think that that's something, you know, we get that from our Lord Jesus. He always was at dinner with his friends. He was always had companions following him. He always had a sense of love for those who are around him. And I think that was something we saw in Pat. And that Saturday night dinner group where I learned the tutti-tot with the Helmses and the Whites and the Sullivans and the Mattinglys and the Trojans and the Obreshes and, I don't know, time to time other folks, that was one of those events that brought people together just for fun, just to enjoy each other's company, just to share each other's lives. She often brought her cream cheese, apricot, and horseradish concoction. I think it's called Jezebel. I don't know why she picked a name like that, but maybe it's because the cream cheese and apricot lulls you into thinking it's going to be sweet, and then you get hit with the horseradish. Her life was filled with laughter. The twins made her laugh. All of her children made her laugh. Movies. She liked a good laugh and a good cry. And her kids could see in her the irony of life. The boys never understood. She used to carry when they would be on long trips, she'd carry a bottle in the car for the boys to pee in. The boys never saw the purpose of that. When the kids were sick, she took care of them as if they were the only child in the family. She herself was almost never sick. Her last visit to the doctor before these last few days, well, last time she got sick was 25 years ago. She was not a person to complain about pain or difficulty. But she was aware of other people and their sickness. When her parents were sick, she took care of them. Both of them lived with in her house. And when her mother was in the nursing home, she visited every day. And that's a lesson to all of us. You know, thinking of that, yesterday I went up to see my mother. I thought, you know, if she could visit her mother every day, I can't get to Baltimore every day, but you know, I could get up there more often. We had some wonderful times together, and I remember when I first really became aware of her was on our trip to Israel and Italy in 1997. I remember her as one of those cooperative and interesting and gentle people. Sometimes when you're the tour leader, you have moments of tension on those things. But with her, she was always a peaceful and gentle presence. We had so many happy days together with Pat and Jack celebrating their 40th and 50th anniversaries, celebrating funerals and being aware of the passage of life in the family. I think she was concerned that her dad's Alzheimer's might be susceptible to that, but she never was had to worry about that. So many happy days. She woke her children up with rise and shine. She liked to read every day those little uplifting meditations from Jesus' calling to send them out to her kids. Her life was, you know, filled with productive work. You know, when we were, she worked with us in the office as the bookkeeper for the last seven, almost 8 years. And she was always such a wonderful presence. She helped to get things done so quickly. And, you know, but she was a good referee between Mike and I. She was a peaceful presence. We're kind of like George Burns and Gracie Allen in the office. I guess that's a good enough. I don't know if maybe we're, I'm not sure who we're like. But she was a person that brought to us, you know, not just an attention to detail and a willingness to go through all of those horrible software programs that have now been inflicted on us, but they, you know, she brought order out of what could have been chaos, and she was a great help to Dennis as he was beginning to take over that work. And I wonder if she didn't somewhere down deep know that things were coming to an end, because she was tying up loose ends, maybe. I don't know. We have to say that this was a life that was so busy. And she deserves whatever rest now that she gets. You know, we edited that passage from Proverbs 31 a little bit, took out some of the middle stuff. But she, you know, that middle stuff in some ways, the stuff of the work that she did, was so much of her life. We said, you know, it says in Proverbs, like merchant ships, she secures provisions from afar. She rises while it is still night and distributes food to her household. She is girt about with strength, and sturdy are her arms. She enjoys the success of her dealings, and at night her lamp is undimmed. She puts her hands to the distaff, and her fingers ply the spindle. She was even part of one of our crafting and knitting clubs there, I think. She reaches out her hands to the poor and extends her arms to the needy. And that's what she certainly did to women in crisis pregnancies and in all of our work with the poor. She fears not the snow for her household, Her charges are doubly clothed. Her husband is prominent at the city gates as he sits with the elders of the land. She makes garments for them all and sells their stock to the merchants. She is clothed with strength and dignity. And that was certainly Pat. Many are the women of proven worth, but you have excelled them all. Charm is deceptive. Beauty is fleeting. But the woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Give her the reward of her labors. Let her praises be sung at the city gates.